on Larry King Now, Oscar winner Jeremy Irons.
I became an actor to be a rogue and a vagabond. I think knighthood should go to people who are, without them, unrecognized. Now, actors, we're recognized much more than we should be. I think there are an enormous number of people in this country and in England and in Europe who are very disaffected with politicians and with politics. And I think global capitalism is not serving our society as it should.
Plus,
are you going to write a memoir?
No.
But you have so much to say.
I have so many things that distract me in life. You know, I have to walk the dog. I have to go and see the horses. I have to make sure the boat isn't blowing off. I have to do the garden. I have to look after my wife.
All next on Larry King Now. Welcome to Larry King Now. Our special guest is Jeremy Irons, Oscar, Emmy, and Tony Award-winning actor, who has left his indelible mark on movies like The Man with the Iron Mask, The Lion King, Lolita, and, of course, Reversal of Fortune, for which he won a very deserved Academy Award. Jeremy recently starred in The Man Who Knew Infinity with Deb Patel about a pioneering Indian mathematician. The movie came out earlier this year, but everyone is talking Oscar. Are you surprised at that?
I'm delighted. It's a wonderful movie in that it's relatively what I would call old-fashioned. It's like the movies we used to make, but it's got a tremendous heart to it.
No computers, no graphics, no bombs going off.
It's just about a relationship between these two mathematicians, and one is Indian, young man, one is a sort of fusty old Cambridge professor. True story, set just before the First World War. But a really delightful film. The director, this particular director, Matthew Brown, had wonderful passion for this story. And when I met him, and I read the script and liked it, met him, and I thought, someone with this amount of passion to tell a story, something good's going to come out of it. And it just worked.
Now, it came out earlier this year.
Yeah.
The Academy, it came out very earlier, like January, February, mm-hmm. right? Now the Academy's talking about it. People are talking about nominations for you, for the star, for others. Are they going to re-show it in movies?
If we get some sort of nomination for the movie, then yes, sure, it'll be out there again. And it deserves to. I mean, it's done well in this country, but it could do even better. But it's not. I mean, yes, an intelligent movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie for grown-ups. And I think we're a bit short of those movies.
Did you like the character you played?
I did. He was a mathematician, and I am not a mathematician. And for me, mathematics is very dry and boring and something I wasn't good at. But the character I play, called G.H. Hardy, he was a lecturer, a professor at Cambridge, and he wrote a short book called A Mathematician's Apology. And I read that book, and I thought, he has a complete passion for pure mathematics, which is almost an art. I mean, they imagine that those theories, those equations are out there waiting for them to grasp. And the mathematics that Ramanujan, this Indian, young Indian man, who used to dream the theories, and in the morning he'd wake up and he'd write them down. And those theorems are still being used, or are being they're proving them at the moment to prove black holes, to prove the string theory. I mean, it's up to the date and
wow,
extraordinary.
How did you like working with that young man?
Dev Patel's great. He's great. I mean, he's young, enthusiastic, a lot of fun. We enjoyed each other.
You played someone that I knew well, Klaus von Bülow.
Aha.
I used to interview him. Right. You became him.
Well.
Did you spend any time with him?
No, I never. Because
you had him down.
Well, that's nice of you. I watched him. I mean, I watched him on your interviews. I watched him on Barbara Walters' interviews. And sort of from that and how he behaved, I tried to get a feeling of him. I watched a lot of the filming of the case, because of course that was all televised, yeah. And just saw how he behaved. And from that, tried to get inside him. I talked a lot to John Richardson, who I'm sure you know. Yeah. John and he were close friends. And John gave me the lowdown a bit about him.
When you're playing someone who is a real-life character that you see, is that harder?
You have to blank them out. Because that's why I didn't meet him before I made the movie. Because I didn't want to meet someone else who said they were Klaus von Bülow. I was Klaus von Bülow. And of course, it's very difficult for him because I would do interviews, like, you know, with you, and I would speak from his point of view because I was him, I played him. And I get these little postcards from him, closely written, saying, no, I don't believe that, I don't think that, I'm not like that, whatever, sort of contradicting what I'd said. And I still have those postcards. But I actually met him about 3 years after we'd finished shooting. I met him at Paul Getty's house. Paul is a neighbour of mine in England, or was, before he died. And he would have a cricket match on Saturdays, I think it was. And my son, who was at that age, about 10, he said, Dad, there's a footballer playing cricket down at... I love his hat, get his autograph. So I said, fine, we'll go down for tea, which they always had in the interval of the match, and we'll get this guy's autograph. So I go down with Sam, my son, and when I get there, and I go into the pavilion, and Paul's there, and he says, "Listen, Klaus is here. He's in the library, looking through the." And he said, "I quite understand if you want to go, because I know you've never wanted to meet him." I said, "Well, no, the film's finished. You know, I'll meet him. I'll very happy to." So I'm standing in the pavilion looking out at the game, and there's a back entrance to the pavilion, and I hear this voice behind me saying, "You see, I'm not fat." And I looked around, it was Klaus, and I said, "I never said you were fat. I said you were bigger than me," which he is. He's a bigger man than me, you know. He said, "Oh." And then we went and sat down on a bench looking at the cricket, and he said, "Are you still in touch with Alan Dershowitz?" And I said, no, I haven't seen him since we made the movies. Oh. I said, "I understand he's representing Leona Helmsley and Michael Tyson at the moment." I said, "Yeah, I'd heard that." He said, "You haven't been asked to play either of them, have you?" And I said, no. I thought Mike Tyson was maybe beyond my range, but I'd have a crack at Leona.
The movie is The Man Who Knew Infinity. Our guest is the incredibly talented Jeremy Irons. We'll talk politics, the state of the industry after the break. Our guest is the great Jeremy Irons. We'll be showing you clips from The Man Who Knew Infinity. And again, the buzz is out about this movie, that there are Academy Awards in the making. You would be supporting actor, right?
I would be supporting actor, yeah.
So you won for being a main actor? Mm. You won for being a sporting actor.
Well, maybe we'll be nominated.
Okay. Maybe nominated. And you won an Emmy.
Yeah.
And you won a Tony for the theater.
I think I won a couple of Emmys.
Yeah. All you need is a Grammy.
A Globe.
And you could do one of the talking books, win a Grammy, and then you got them all.
I recorded Lolita. Actually, it was a great recording of the book. And we won the Audiobooks Award or whatever, but not a Grammy, which is a shame. But next year, the BBC, I've recorded all of T.S. Eliot's work.
Really?
Yeah. And the BBC are putting it out on New Year's Day, throughout the day. And I hope that we will find an American company who will put it out on CD so that we can put ourselves up for a Grammy.
Did you train your voice?
No. Mm. I just smoke.
Yeah, me too. We'll smoke. Mm. This episode won't air until after the United States election. We want to be close to the nominating time. Yeah. What are your thoughts about what's happened here in America in this election year?
Well, I think a lot of things are happening which has caused what is happening during your election. I think there are an enormous number of people in this country and in England and in Europe who are very disaffected with politicians and with politics. I think the canary is coming home to roost, so to speak, and I think global capitalism is not serving our society as it should. There are too many people without jobs. There is too big a gap between the rich and the poor. And the governments, certainly in our country, they don't seem to have the power to address that. They're so keen to keep industry there. They're so keen in London to keep London as a financial centre, so they want it to be unregulated, and unregulated capitalism. You know, I've always thought that capitalism is like water. We need it to live, but it can drown us.
Well said.
And I think there's an element of that happening. And so, when you get this disaffection with politics, then I think you get people like we had a man called Nigel Farage at home, which led to our Brexit. You have Donald Trump, who speaks what I call Bauhaus language. He speaks to the guys on the street. And no one's ever happy with government. But Donald has charisma and he speaks everyone's language. He doesn't know nothing, I think, about politics. But he knows what's wrong, some of the things that are wrong.
But he called himself the American Brexit.
Yeah, well, I think there is indeed a parallel there.
What do you think of Bob Dylan winning the Nobel?
I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. He is a great poet. His lyrics have seeped into the lifeblood of a generation or more. I also think it's great that he's gone to ground.
The Irish Times recently quoted you as saying the film business has changed hugely. You seem to spend about 30% of the time producing the films and 70% of the time talking about it. Mm. Why?
Why is that? Yeah. I think it's because there's more competition. You know, there's so much on screen now, whether it be the wonderful work that's happening on cable television. You can download everything now. Whenever you want it. And so the marketplace is much more crowded than it used to be. And the fact you're releasing a film could go by unnoticed.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I won my Oscar, I didn't do any campaign for it. I was in, I think, Czechoslovakia making a film, finished that, came to New York, did Saturday Night Live. Following day, I went to Los Angeles, had one dinner the night before the Oscars, then the Oscars. That was my campaign. Now you couldn't do that.
No.
You know, as an actor and as a director, as a producer, you're out on the road selling
the product.
You can't
stay.
No.
Or you can't be removed.
No. Sad but true.
The industry's changed a lot.
Yeah.
But acting is still acting. Once the camera rolls or the director says shoot or you're on stage,
yeah.
Do you prefer theater?
No, I love to mix the two. A couple of months ago, did O'Neill's Long Day's Journey into Night at the theatre where I started, at the Bristol Old Vic. And Richard Eyre...
Was that 4.5 hours?
No, we got it to 3 hours, 20 minutes. We really gave it some welly. We didn't cut anything. But it had great energy. It's a wonderful production. And I'm hoping that in 2018, we're going to take it to London and then New York, to BAM, I hope, and then here to Los Angeles.
What's it like to say O'Neill's lines?
Well, it's fantastic. And it's once you've learned them, and there's an awful lot of them, once you've learned them, they serve you really well. And it was absolute joy. But to learn them, you know, when we get to a certain age, learning lines, it gets harder.
Yeah, of course.
In the old days, we'd have someone in the prompt corner. And so if you sort of dropped a line, then you'd have it whispered to you. But nowadays, well, we didn't. We didn't have anybody there. So you were on that stage and you just had to keep it or hope that your fellow actor would pull you right if you went wrong.
Will Jeremy reprise his role as Scar in the live-action remake of The Lion King? We'll talk about that. Don't go away. Our guest is Jeremy Irons, one of my favorite actors, the man who knew infinity. We'll be talking about a lot this fall. A number of great actors have been awarded knights, sir this, sir that, and you have been quoted saying you don't want to be knighted.
Yeah.
Why not, Sir Jeremy?
Because I don't think it's, you know, I became an actor to be a rogue and a vagabond. which is how we used to call actors in England, and not to be a knob, which is what we call the aristocrats. So I have no, I don't want to be a sir. I
think you won't refuse it?
Well...
You might?
It has been...
You've already been offered it?
We don't talk about those things. But I don't think... I think knighthood should go to people and honours should go to people who are, without them, unrecognised. Now, actors, we're recognised much more than we should be. We're not that... I mean, we have a value, but we're not that valuable. We get very well remunerated for the work we do. But there are lots of people who do fantastic work
that's
in all fields of life. And I think they're the ones who should get the pat on the back.
I was having dinner with Anthony Quinn once, and everyone in the room was looking at him.
Right.
And he said, isn't that funny? There could be a brain surgeon over there who saved someone's life today, and they're looking at me, an actor, who is basically a child.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You now play Alfred in Batman.
I do.
Do you like that?
Well, I do. I love working with Ben Affleck, with Zack Snyder, who's our director, is a lot of fun. They're big movies. They're not, you know, I prefer to make a movie like The Man Who Knew Infinity or like the one I've just finished, which is called Monumental, because you're on the bridge of the ship. You know, you're traveling with it, you're driving it. Whereas in these big, movies like Batman Superman, it's like you get taken out in a sort of pilot cutter and piped aboard, and you're somewhere on the ship doing your thing, and then the ship's going on, and then you leave it and you go off. You're sort of nothing to do with the drive of it.
You're also the voice of Scar in The Lion King, and Disney is planning a live-action remake. What do you think?
Well, I hear that the remake they've done of live action of previous one they did, people say, which I haven't seen, people say it's fantastic. Is it Jungle Book?
The Jungle Book.
Yeah, they say it's fantastic. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing it. They haven't approached me yet. I don't know who else will play Scar. Maybe some whippersnapper from somewhere will come.
You're going to speak at the Oxford Union.
I am.
What is the subject of your address?
I'm becoming Chancellor of Bath Spa University, and I'm being inaugurated at the end of next week, and I'm just doing that speech at the moment. I'll see how that goes.
Do you have to attend school? Do you have to teach?
No, I don't teach. I'm the sort of figurehead.
Are you going to write a memoir?
No.
Why not?
Because anything worth happening, I couldn't possibly write about.
But you have so much to say.
But who cares?
Oh, come on, people care. You're a wonderful actor and you have a lot to say and you've lived a hell of a life. Max is going to be an actor, your son?
Yeah, Max is an actor. I don't know, I do enjoy writing, although I find I'm very easily distracted. And the only time I've written anything, which was a long piece for a newspaper many years ago, the only reason I wrote it was because Sam Spiegel, who you'd remember.
I interviewed him.
Yeah, I was about to do a movie for him, and I needed just to get out of the country, I think, for a week for some tax reasons or whatever. And he said, go down to my place in Saint-Tropez, stay there for a week. And I was on my own there with a staff of three or four who would cook for me and do everything. So I had nothing to do, and I just sat and wrote. And food would come, and then food would go, and I'd keep writing, and food would come, and food would go. And it's like that week lasted 10 minutes. It was extraordinary, and I really loved it. I'd love to do it again, obviously longer than a newspaper piece, but I have so many things that distract me in life. You know, I have to walk the dog, I have to go and see the horses, I have to make sure the boat isn't blowing off.
Oh, Jeremy is.
I have to do the garden. I have to look after my wife.
So sorry for you.
No, but you know what I mean. Because your life will be similar. We have all these distractions.
Yeah,
and if I could get myself in the soundproof box with some packs of cigarettes.
But you'd find a way to be. You still smoke?
I do, I'm afraid.
I gave it up. I had a heart attack. Well, I had a heart attack.
Yeah, well, that might encourage me to give it up.
Who would Jeremy trade places with? We'll find out. We'll play a little game of If You Only Knew. And don't forget The Man Who Knew Infinity. Just don't go away. We're back with Jeremy Irons. When can we see Monumental?
I suppose, where are we now? I suppose we'll see it next spring.
Yeah. Who are you in that?
I play a former Marine, a Vietnam vet, who has nothing to live for and therefore would be quite happy to die, and gets involved in a getaway chase, which goes throughout the movie, with his grandson and his girlfriend, and I'm in the back of the truck, trying to do everything to get myself killed, and in fact save the day as a result.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it's a comedy. It's a sweet film.
There is, I'm told, a Jeremy IronsNet Twitter feed.
Is there? I don't know. I don't know all about that, and I don't really like it. I know there's a website which somebody in Ohio, I think, does, which is sort of quite useful, because when I forget things, as you know, at my age, you do forget things all the time. I can actually look it up and say, when was that? What did you know?
Some social media questions for you. Stonebreaker tweets. You've done a series of voice work during your career. What's been your favorite of those roles?
Of course, I love The Lion King. But I also enjoy very much doing National Geographic stuff, Africa, because I've always found that the voice work I like to do is voice work where I'm learning and where I'm being amazed by what I'm watching, because we do it to the screen, because that keeps me interested. And Beverly Joubert, who's a great photographer, and her husband out in the Okavango Delta, around there. They do amazing programs. And I do their work and enjoy that. But anything that's geographical, volcanoes or whatever, I'm fascinated in, so I do that work.
Jeff Prince asks, Scar or Simon?
Simon's better built.
Barry Nelson via Facebook. You played twin brother gynecologists in David Cronenberg's acclaimed film Dead Ringers. Do you have any special memories or reflections on your work in that movie?
Well, I do. I have very happy memories of working with David Cronenberg, who really makes you feel that it's a joint effort. I remember being very worried about making it, because you know there's so many technical things when you're filming that can get in the way of the performance, also enhance it, but can distract you from. And when he came and asked me to play two identical twins, I thought that's going to be a logistical and technical nightmare. And we went over to Toronto, and we spent a day working with video camera, but with the same technique of we were going to use on film. And I found it very easy, and I thought, yeah, piece of cake, I can do this. But of course, what I always used to look forward to, Cronenberg's a great motor car guy, and he would have a Ferrari or a Morgan or whatever parked in the studio. And at the end of the day, we were living quite near each other. We'd drive back through Toronto, and that was the highlight of our day.
You ever turned down a role you regretted?
Never turned down a role and regretted it, no. I try not to regret anything. I mean, I've missed two or three, which I won't mention, which I would like to have done because I wasn't available. But I think I've been pretty lucky. I don't think I deserve to regret.
Gail Kubik wants to know if you've played a character you did not like and how you reconciled it.
Well, you have to like them. So you get inside them, and you are them.
We play a little game of You Only Knew. I just throw some things at you.
Oh, my God.
When are you the happiest?
I'm happy when I'm in balance. It's normally when I'm in my garden or with my dog or with my family, with just a few people. Happiness comes at you like a scent, unexpected. I remember landing after a long time in America in my garden about 6 o'clock in the morning. I caught an early flight, which landed very early. And the house wasn't awake yet, and I knew my family were in the house, and I was wandering through the garden, and the dew was still out on the roses and on the grass, and the smells were wonderful as the sun began to creep through the garden, and I thought, it doesn't get better than this.
Guilty pleasure.
Oh, my smoking, I suppose.
Last great book you read?
Ah, I'm so bad at remembering names of books. I'm really great.
You don't have to remember.
No, I forgot.
It's not a quiz.
It's not, that's right.
Place your...
No prize at the end of this.
What?
No prize.
No what?
Prize.
My love.
Your love.
A place you've never been to you'd most like to go.
Well, I've never been to Africa.
Despite all the National Geographic stuff.
No, never been there. I've always been, asked. I mean, I've been to South Africa and
I've been to, South
to southern Morocco, but never the bit in between. So I'd like to do that.
First play you saw?
First play I saw. I think it was a musical. I think it was by Julian Slade. And I think it was, or was it My Fair Lady? No, I think it was a musical called Follow That Girl. We used to go, I lived in the Isle of Wight, and Dad used to take us to London for sort of Christmas treats normally, and we'd go and see a musical. And I think My Fair Lady or Follow That Girl was...
Secret talent.
My secret talent? Well, I'm very, very good on a comb with toilet paper. I can
really?
Do good sounds with
it. You know, we could bring back My Fair Lady and you could star.
I'd love to. As I said,
sing it.
I don't have regret. Well, I've done it. I recorded it with Kira Takanawa, which I think you can find online, with a wonderful cast. Warren Mitchell, John Gielgud, Kira Takanawa, me. We recorded it with the London Philharmonic, I think.
Why can't a woman
be more like
a man?
Yeah, so that's out there. I would have loved to have done that show. I think I'm too old now, you know. He should be about 35.
Really?
Well, he should be. Rex played him older, but...
What frightens you the most?
Not challenging, not being challenged.
A character you most enjoyed playing?
Oh, I loved playing Richard II when I played him on stage. I loved playing, what's his name in The Real Thing in the Tom Stoppard play?
Oh,
Henry.
That's a good point.
With Glenn Close, yeah.
Historic figure you'd most like, you wish you'd met?
Well, I'd miss, well, historic figure. I'd like to talk seriously to Jesus.
Like, were you the son? Do you think you were the son?
Don't care about that. Just, you know, what are your hopes for the future?
What do you make of what we've done with the planet?
Yeah.
What talent do you most envy in others?
I'd love to be able to play piano. I play a little bit, but not well. I think mimicry. I'd love to be a good mimic. Kevin Spacey, for example.
Oh,
fantastic mimic.
Bobby Darin, yeah. He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Who would you trade places with for a day?
Hillary.
What makes you cry?
Something that just gets to me, and it can be other people. Truth. It's truth, true emotion.
You believe in extraterrestrial life?
I believe there is more twixt heaven and earth than is dreamt of in our philosophies.
And finally, if you could go back in time and give advice to your teenage self, what would you say to you?
Take a little bit more care of your friends.
It's always great talking. Next time, not too much time between.
Please.
Thanks to my guest, Jeremy Irons. Don't forget, The Man Who Knew Infinity is going to be up for awards. We hope it gets them, and you'll be seeing it again in theaters. You've seen some clips in this show. You can find me on Twitter @KingsThings, and I'll see you next time.